This is Stateside. I'm Zoe Clark, sitting in for Cynthia Canty. It's been 20 years since NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, went into effect January 1st, 1994, drastically changing the economic relationship between Canada, the U.S., and Mexico. While signing the bill into law, then-President Clinton said NAFTA means jobs, American jobs, and good-paying jobs. So let's spend the next little while taking stock of NAFTA and what it's meant particularly to Michigan, its economy, the auto industry, the state's workers. Joining us now are Patrick Anderson, CEO of the Michigan-based Anderson Economic Group, and Harley Shaken, professor at UC Berkeley, who specializes in labor and the global economy. Welcome to you both.
Nice to be here, Zoe.
Now, the idea of the North American Free Trade Agreement, although we often think of President Clinton signing the bill, it actually began under President Reagan. That's when negotiations began. And it was bipartisan. Both Democrats and Republicans voted for it. But let's jump 20 years later from all of that to today. And let's start with the simple question that most likely does not have a simple answer. Harley, did NAFTA do what it was supposed to do?
No, it did not. NAFTA was sold as doing two things. First, creating a lot of jobs in the U.S. The projections that were used were several hundred thousand the first year alone. And then improving living standards in Mexico, and the U.S. and Mexico would converge in an upward direction. During the initial debate, the fireworks was not about the free trade arrangement with Canada, because these were two very similar societies economically, with a similar standard of living and roughly similar environmental and labor laws in terms of their enforcement. With Mexico, this was the first time that a developing and highly industrial economy were brought together in a free trade agreement. So what's happened? NAFTA was supposed to give us a trade surplus with Mexico, generating jobs. The year before it was passed, we had almost a $5 billion trade surplus with Mexico. For the last 3 years, we've had a $100 billion-plus trade deficit with Mexico. The result of a deficit of that scale is certainly a downward pressure on employment, but also the issue of inequality in Mexico in some ways has been exacerbated by NAFTA. In manufacturing, over the last 20 years, the average productivity has gone up by 80%. In Mexico. That means the average worker has produced 80% more. That's impressive and positive. But average compensation, wages and benefits, have gone down by 20%.
And Patrick, as Harley just mentioned, I mean, there's this number, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of jobs moving to Mexico. What do you say to opponents of NAFTA who say it's been a job loss for the states?
Well, I disagree with the notion that hundreds of thousands of jobs have moved to Mexico in isolation, as if that's the only thing that happened.
Sure.
Or the main effect of NAFTA.
Sure.
And I'm sure if Harley continued on with what he was talking about, he would have described some of the other things that I'll talk about now. NAFTA may or may not have been oversold in Washington, D.C. I would have to say that most things that pass in Washington, D.C. are hugely oversold. And this one, if it was oversold on a modest basis for Washington. But it did promise growth in jobs and income across the entire continent compared with what would have happened if we didn't open up trade. And the question of whether trade increases overall economic well-being and jobs has been studied and has been debated for at least 200 years. Adam Smith talked about it back in 1776 about corn and about the then nascent mechanization that was going on. Clearly, we would have, if we did not have NAFTA, the automobile industry would not look anything like it does today. And there's a chance that it would not be nearly as vibrant. In fact, it may not even be centered on Detroit anymore. It may have been moved almost entirely to other countries. That is not the case now. You can look at the automobile industry and the center of the world automobile industry still has to be, when you look at those centers, you still have to look at Japan, Germany, and Detroit as the centers. So in terms of whether it has maintained jobs, clearly it's different, and clearly in terms of manufacturing, not just in Mexico but all over the world, you see huge growths in productivity per worker hour, and you see changes in compensation that are usually a lot better than the statistics that Harley talked about for Mexico, but not in the same range of ratio of growth. But you do have manufacturing here, and you have a great, vibrant automobile industry that continues for 20 years on. It did not, as some of the people who feared, go wholesale to Mexico, go wholesale to Taiwan. It didn't go to China. We still don't have any, by the way, passenger cars from China sold in the United States from any major automaker, because the U.S. auto market is so hard to get into in terms of not trade barriers, in terms of quality. Consumers just demand a lot.
Let's go ahead and let Harley agree with Patrick on something.
Yeah. To get this out of contention, I think trade can be very positive, and I think expanded trade can be even better. But it does depend on the rules of the game. The problem with NAFTA isn't trade between the U.S. and Mexico, but rules of the game that say, look, intellectual property rights are critical, that's appropriate, we'll put strong language. Profits are critical, that's appropriate, we'll put strong language. But when it comes to labor standards and the environment, it was virtually silent in terms of its impact. And that has resulted in a very unbalanced situation. A trade agreement gives us, in effect, the same economy with profoundly different standards when it comes to workers and the environment. Let me give one statistic on the auto industry.
Sure.
Mexico now exports more auto parts to the U.S. than Japan, than Germany, than Korea. In fact, it exports more auto parts to the U.S. than all those three countries combined. We run a $42 billion trade deficit with Mexico in auto parts alone. There's something wrong with that picture. We could have a productive, positive, growing trade relation with Mexico, but we need rules of the game that ensure that working families in both countries benefit from that.
Harley Shaken, professor at UC Berkeley, who specializes in labor and the global economy. Also on the line, Patrick Anderson, CEO of the Michigan-based Anderson Economic Group, talking about NAFTA, its effects on Michigan 20 years later. And Patrick, I want to get on to that point. Ask Bob King, the UAW's current president, about NAFTA at 20, and you will get the answer. He said, it's been a disaster to me. So, Patrick, is there a difference between what NAFTA has meant for big corporations and what it's actually meant for the everyday worker?
I think it's been positive both for giant corporations, middle-sized corporations, most small companies, and definitely for workers. And I want to point again to what was the potential 20 years ago. And those of us who lived in Michigan 20 years ago and saw what I thought was often a very bad side of the country I love, but the country's character sometimes reacts to immigrants or foreign threats in a manner that's very ugly. And there was a lot of what I'll call out and out Japan bashing 20 years ago. And if you go back in the 80s, even worse, there was the specter of, driving tanks over Japanese cars.
Yeah.
There was a lot of very ugly rhetoric as if, these people usually or sometimes at least termed in a very ugly way, were taking our jobs and everything. That didn't happen. Now you have an automobile industry in which American car makers compete at the top quality levels, in which they compete in almost every segment, and in which Japanese nameplate auto companies such as Honda and Toyota manufacture, assemble in the United States, and where, quote, American companies are actually integrated across Mexico, Canada, and the United States as well. And you even have German companies such as Volkswagen, such as Mercedes, such as BMW assembling in the United States. If you look at that industry, you see that these claims that we would lose all of manufacturing and the United States would turn into a race to the bottom, that just hasn't happened. That's not to say that what Harley's talking about in terms of environmental protections in other countries is not something that is of some concern. It's not to say that NAFTA handled every aspect of international trade and societies. It didn't. I do think on intellectual property, which he raised, NAFTA does have some intellectual property protections, and you have a lot of companies that will do business in NAFTA countries, but not in China, where there is a serious, serious issue with intellectual property protection. So I think it has been very good for workers. It's been very good for employers. And over a 20-year period, it's hard to say that something's good for workers but not employers or vice versa. Was it good for the United Auto Workers? That I can't say. I think the United Auto Workers, as well as many other parties, including the management of the companies involved, has a lot to answer for in terms of the bankruptcy of General Motors and Chrysler. That occurred in a NAFTA environment, and it had already started before NAFTA went into play. So I think a lot of things happened there, and I can't second guess the president of the UAW's opinion of whether the UAW has benefited or not from NAFTA. Clearly, he has an idea about that that's superior to mine. But in terms of workers, workers actually have more opportunity now across a number of industries in the United States, Canada, and Mexico than they would have had without NAFTA.
Harley, your response?
I don't think the numbers bear that out at all. Overall, the Mexican economy is too small in relation to the U.S. To have an overwhelming impact. But if you look at NAFTA as a model for global trade, were this generalized with all countries, it would be very damaging in the U.S. That rising productivity and quality in Mexico means that workers produce more and earn less. We have a similar problem, but not as extreme in the U.S., and NAFTA exacerbates that. Does that mean we couldn't have a productive trade relation with Mexico? Of course not. We could have a very productive relationship. But imagine if you said to Microsoft, look, we want to expand trade with Mexico, but we're not going to protect your intellectual property rights. Let the market sort that out by itself. Microsoft wouldn't remotely want to go into a trade relationship under those conditions, and they'd be right not to. But that's exactly what we've said to working families in the U.S. Labor standards and their enforcement in Mexico, well, whatever. And the net result is it's fed into our own inequality problem, and some estimates put the job loss as high as 1 million in manufacturing.
Now, we just have a few minutes left here, and I want to look towards two more trade deals that are in the works right now. We have the Trans-Pacific Partnership with 11 countries and then a free trade agreement with Europe. Harley, let's start with you. Looking at what we know now about NAFTA, how skeptical do you think we should be about these two new trade agreements?
Very skeptical, particularly the Trans-Pacific Partnership. It would be buying a series of Brooklyn Bridges, given that all the defects in NAFTA, if anything, have been exacerbated in the context of some of the 11 countries that we would be signing a trade agreement with. In this case, the Senate Majority Leader, Harry Reid, just last week came out very forcefully against it, and many, many Democrats and some Republicans in the Congress are coming out against it. Again, it's not opposition to trade, but it's wanting to ensure that trade benefits ordinary families, improves the middle class, and results in a trading relationship that generates jobs for everyone. The flip side of low wages in Mexico is low purchasing power. That diminishes our ability to export, contributes to a $100 billion trade deficit. That's what we're looking at with the Trans-Pacific Partnership. The agreement with Europe also has its own complications that have not really been forcefully addressed. We talk about the rhetoric of free trade, but we forget it's the rules of the game. The devil is in the details. We want trade that expands the middle class.
Patrick, as Harley noted, you've got President Obama pushing for these, but it looks like his fellow Democrat, as we heard Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, is saying not so fast. Is there fair? Is that fair?
That has been the pattern with Democratic presidents for a long time, and Democratic members of Congress. Often Democratic members of Congress feel a lot more pressure from labor unions to oppose these, and in more recent decades from what has emerged as more powerful elements of the Democratic Party, such as the environmental organizations, and they often take a much narrower view of the national interest than presidents do. I don't want to go into the details of bills that are introduced as much as Harley did, but I have to say, free trade benefits people. It benefits them because it lets them have more work opportunities, and it benefits them because they're able to buy things that are less expensive and have things and spend less of their time wasted on things that they can't do as well as somebody else, or let things rot at borders and be inefficient. It does disrupt things, undoubtedly. But if you look at the 20-year history of NAFTA, you look at a Mexico that now sends about 66% of its exports to the United States, Canada a little bit less, and the United States exporting a lot to Canada and Mexico. And apparently about one-third of what Mexico exports to the United States, they bought in parts from us. So there's a lot of exporting that gets re-exported. I think that's unambiguously good. The United States has been generally a beacon of free trade. We have our dark moments, most notably Smoot-Hawley during the Depression, which hurt everybody. I'm much more happy with the direction toward the United States leading towards free trade, setting an example, helping other countries improve their standard of living, and also helping our own workers and consumers doing that. And I think that overcompensates us for what are undoubtedly disruptions that occur any time when you open doors and windows.
Patrick Anderson, CEO of the Michigan-based Anderson Economic Group, and Harley Shaken, professor at UC Berkeley, who specializes in labor and the global economy. A really interesting conversation. We'll have to have you both on again. Thanks so much for the time.
Thank you.
All right, great to be on. Great to talk to you again, Harley.
For me as well, Patrick.